Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And good morning, everybody. Yes, the breaking news you heard all this morning in Wisconsin Morning News with Eric and Vince. The big trade, all of us essentially in Wisconsin sort of knew it was going to happen at some point, but it's never a good thing when your superstar talent, Giannis Antetokounmpo, decides to go to a different team.
It's true. I had a good friend of mine who works part-time for the Bucks. I texted him this morning and said, wellness check? Because he was, he's heartbroken. But he had a great analogy. He was like, this kind of feels like when you have an older family member who's been sick for a long time and, you know, they finally pass and you're still sad, but there's not quite the surprise aspect of it because it's been a long time thinking that it's going to come. So it's a little dramatic because he does care that much, but it does. It's like, it kind of feels like we finally ripped the Band-Aid off as far as how long this conversation's been happening, as far as, is he going to go? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? And I don't know. I feel very grateful.
Yeah.
I don't feel, it's a big question as far as what does the team look like? Who's going to the games? You know, those expensive tickets. How much, what is the turnover going to be for season ticket holders and a lot of that aspect? But at least from the basketball people that I talk to of how good of a deal this is for the Bucks, no one seems to think it's a terrible deal.
I am thankful that he played for the Bucks. I got to see him play probably 50 times in his career. I mean, some great games. He won us a championship, helped to win a championship in 2021, made one of my life moments. I got to be the lead broadcaster on the parade coverage on 620 WTMJ. I'll never forget that, along with Sherwin Hughes, our teammates.
I remember saying hi to you guys, waving to you because I was getting content for the parade.
10-time NBA All-Star, obviously 2021 NBA champ, along with his great team. He's a player that is top 10 all time, maybe? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
So I got to watch Michael Jordan play in his prime. I got to see Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm old enough to remember some of the legendary Kareem. I saw Kareem play at the old Milwaukee Arena. So I've seen some great talents. He gave his heart and soul to this team. He lived in Milwaukee.
The city.
Yes. I mean, there shouldn't be any negativity. And I don't think there is a ton of it. I will say this to those who say why. He was injured a lot in his last 5 years. And we didn't win a championship. We were disappointed by those results in the playoffs. I don't think he was smart about playing in the offseason because he didn't let his body heal so he could be healthier for the NBA season. But I'm never going to criticize Giannis because the guy did amazing things. The Bucks received a heck of a lot of compensation for Giannis. Not just now, they have the extra pick in the first round. They've got picks going into the 2030s, first round picks. Who knows who those players might be? The NBA draft is always a crapshoot. You can hit on somebody and they turn out to be amazing. You can draft someone high that's supposed to be an all-star and they turned out to be a bust. You don't know. We have different leadership now. There's some questions about the Bucks leadership that maybe allowed this to happen, that maybe Giannis wasn't feeling like he was communicated enough. I heard some of that from Lori Nichol, who joins Vince and Eric every Tuesday. So there's a lot of commentary. I guess my question for all of you who listen to our show, Point Taken on 620 WTMJ, is, are you mad at Giannis? Are you sad? Like, what are you feeling? Because I'm happy for him. He gets to go to his next chapter, and he gets to see what that might bring. And, you know, I wish him luck in Miami. I don't wish him not to have success. I want him to be successful. He's a great player. Why would I think otherwise? And I'm not a huge NBA guy, but I certainly enjoyed the long run. What is it, 13 years here in Milwaukee? And you got your champions.
I got my
Journal Sentinel.
My Journal Sentinel, for anyone watching it's a limited edition. George Stanley, shout out.
Yeah.
While he was still at Journal Sentinel, he gave me, it's a t-shirt with the front page of the Journal Sentinel when they won the championship.
Those are rare things. Yeah. I mean, we've had some champions in this state, obviously. Packers being first and foremost, 13-time world champions, Bucks twice. Brewers, still some work to do. And obviously, some of the other professional teams have had some success as well. But we are spoiled here. And we've been spoiled and lucky to have Giannis.
I totally agree. I was, you know, I think it's a feeling of, I don't know, I think it's very, what do I want to say? I think it, like, to be sad is an expected feeling right now. But I just keep thinking about how magical the summer of 2021 was. It's, you know, it's been interesting to watch the Knicks and New York being celebrating. It does remind me a lot of what that summer felt like here. But for us, it was also, you know, it was coming out of COVID. And then obviously there was some COVID that came back after those rallies and parades and stuff. But it was like coming out of COVID, it was we went into the summer because they had pushed the games. And so it didn't happen until July as far as the championship. And I just remember, I mean, that was how many weeks? Almost a month of, that was my first summer in Milwaukee because I had only moved here the fall before. My first summer with Mike, meeting all of these new friends. Like, it was like, for me, that was like my introduction into the city of such a magical moment. And I think seeing what the people of this city was made of, how many people were just so excited. Like, it's hard to actually, as you can tell, I'm struggling to find the words of like what that stretch of time felt like to be part of and to witness. And that doesn't happen without Giannis, and it doesn't happen without Bobby. I do feel a little bad.
Bobby Portis, yeah.
Like, Bobby is so loved, and since he's part of this trade package, I feel like he's kind of playing like, it's like when Farrah Fawcett died the same day as Michael Jackson. and you're like, oh, like, this is also a huge loss to lose Bobby. And the thing is, with both of them, it is as much as what they did on the court as what they did off the court, right? Like, these are two guys. I know for a fact that some of the things that Bobby did as far as like Feeding America and different time that he did,
great,
it's not
work.
Only that he did it, it's that when he, I know because I was with talking to people who were on those photo shoots or shoots for the commercials, like, he was very generous with his time as far as being there, doing extra stuff, and not being a diva when he was signing up to do different philanthropy or campaigns and stuff like that. So it's also what they did for the community and how they showed up and how they treated people. And so overall, it's not just a loss of two really great players. It's two great, like, community members who did a lot for us.
Yeah, the word that I would use, ambassadors for the city. They actually, they put the Bucks and Milwaukee in the center of the world when it came to basketball, obviously. But
truly the world, because Giannis is a world superstar.
Oh, my God, yes. And for many years, and I don't know if it's still the case, but he was like the leading sports figure that people looked at from other countries. And stuff. Giannis. And I can remember going to Bucks games and sitting there and seeing all the Greek fans would show up and then hang around after the games. So he'd sometimes come out and talk to him. That's what made him unique. He, above all else, besides being a spectacular basketball player and an athlete, he was a tremendous human being.
Is a tremendous human being.
He's not dead.
Present tense.
Yeah. But that is a value and a skill set that maybe more NBA and other pro athletes should look at, because he's certainly lived a life, and he's going on to whatever his next chapter is. I wish him success. Lots of texts coming in. We'll read some of those texts and get your Giannis thoughts before we move on to some other things in politics and the world beyond. But, Giannis traded many, many years here in Milwaukee. It's a sad day, but it's also a great day, too, because we're going to see what that next chapter is, not only for Giannis, but for the Milwaukee Bucks. That's a big question mark. We'll get to that and more after this on 620 WTMJ.
I think the front office, the ownership, for believing in me. And I was 18 years old back in Greece. They allowed me to lead this team and trust me.
Some vintage Giannis for you. Giannis Antetokounmpo, now a member of the Miami Heat, or at least will be officially. I think it's July 7th or something like that.
I was thinking about this because, you know, there's a lot of really great players. Obviously, we're seeing the rise of Wemby. LeBron's, I don't know if he's going to retire this year or next year, but there's something really special about Giannis's story that I think also plays into people's attachment to him, right? It's like the fact that he got here and grew another 2 inches because he was so malnourished, right? Because they were so poor.
Yeah.
And the story of what his parents did and sacrificed for those four boys, and then just the serendipitous turn of events that got him here and what his family has been able to do, what his all four brothers have been able to do, like everything they're doing with their father's foundation, that it feels also like specifically suited for the Midwest and for Wisconsin, that I think adds to the enchanted nature of his story and his rise.
Oh, lots of texts on this. Be happy for him. It's a game. Love the guy. Some people going after the ownership group. I don't know. Well, I mean, we'll find out.
We'll find out, right? As far as, this is a small town, and I think as the ownership group of mostly Haslam, right? Because he's the newer one right. of the two. And if it feels like there's a shift in, you know, how oriented they are in the community, how the moves that they make, you know, of what happens with the GM. And the, like, this is stuff for ESPN Milwaukee to have more insight on yeah. than us.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there was, it's nice to have an organization when they're really embedded in the community. Like we know the Brewers very much so.
Fantastic
do that.
Job. Whether it's the Brewers Foundation or all the other stuff.
Green Bay. Packers, and I yep. think, and I think certainly the Bucks were doing that. I think it is yet to be seen if they will continue to be like that.
From the 262, I'm happy for him. Hope he does well. He no longer wanted to play for the Bucks, so it's a win for both him and the Bucks. 414, not upset with Giannis. This is the name of the game. Players come and go. That's true. I mean, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, lots of other players. This is an interesting one, 414. I'm a Giannis fan, not a Bucks fan anymore. I mean, okay. I mean, what does that mean? I don't know. You could be a Giannis fan. You don't have to be a Bucks fan.
Also be both. You could be yeah. a Bucks fan and a Giannis fan.
Yeah, it's true. 414, I fell in love with his character, and he was a unique player. I mean, just the goofy stuff he did mm-hmm. and the 50-nugget thing and all that stuff. Interesting question from the 414. What about all the people that paid good, hard money to see him in the last few years, and he only played 36 games last year? I don't know if that 36 total is right. I did bring that
maybe
point
36
up.
Home games.
Yeah. That was my disagreement. He chose to play in the offseason for his home country, Greece. And whether that's a smart play, I mean, it's his call. It's his body, his life. But I don't think that helped him when it came to his NBA season, because I don't want to go through the numbers because I'm not a sports guy, but he missed a lot of games in the last 5 years. He averaged, there's 82 game season, he averaged in the 60s. So he missed quite a few games. Not all because of injury.
But also that all the stars do that. That's a problem with the NBA.
Yeah, that's a
that is an NBA issue yeah. as far as the, I'm not going to say softness, but maybe I will, of the stars across the board not playing. I mean, wasn't Anthony, not Anthony Edwards, one of the guys out that was out last year with like a fingernail injury or something stupid. Like yeah, there is a softness to the NBA now that did not exist in the 90s as far as pampering the players, I think.
It will be interesting to see what happens to the support of this team, because we'll have essentially all new players at some point in the next few years.
I mean, I think this was what happens, right? Franchises rebuild. Yeah, and sure. I think you're either, it's the same thing as how, but think about how bad the Packers were when I was like a kid. So the 80s, up until Brett Favre yeah. came and Reggie White. And so, you know, did people abandon the Packers then?
No. And no. We have two great shining examples of how that can work. Brewers, they've lost their manager. They've lost their players. They turned over their roster. Packers, same thing. New coach a few years back, Matt LaFleur. We lost our star quarterback. We got different players playing in almost every position, but they still maintain a high quality of play. My expectation is with all these draft picks and the right leadership, I'm open to this team being pretty good. Again, not an NBA guy.
Who's the coach going to be?
Did they hire
a new coach. Yeah, that's totally blanked for a second.
How wild is that we don't even know his name? Because I'm not a sports guy when it comes to basketball. I don't follow it the way I do the other sports. It's just the way I am.
Yours number one is Packers.
Correct.
Packers, Brewers, Bucks.
Yeah.
Any college teams sneak in there?
No.
Okay. That's good.
Except my UWM Panthers, when they're good.
Their baseball team was very good this year.
Very good. True story. I almost lured them to Oak Creek if we could have got the Rock to build their stadium in Oak Creek. That would have been so cool. I would have been an ambassador for them then. That would have been a fun little relationship we could have had. But yeah, who knows? All right.
What a coulda.
Yeah, exactly. She's Chris, and I'm Steve. His point taken. The Giannis trade obviously consuming most of the oxygen in the room when it comes to Wisconsin news and sports. But we'll move on. Lots of other things to talk about on the program today. Thanks for being there for us. If you miss any or all of our broadcasts, you can find it always at WTMJ.com. We're going to move on to some other stuff in a second here. Lots of text. Thanks for all the people who took the time to text. I think it's... Does the word inevitable seem like the right... I mean, that's sort of what I felt like the last few months, right? Because I heard Lori Nicolon with Vince and Eric this morning. She said basically she knew in March he was gone. Or they had a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a chance that he was going to be gone before the season was even, like, the last trade deadline. Inevitable as far as the last couple of months, yes. But like we were saying at break, I do think the Bucks tried, like as far as the front office, yeah. right? Like they got Dame, Chris Middleton got hurt. Like there was just a lot of things outside of your control, which is also just how sports is, right?
It's not easy to win championships.
Think about us like starting the Packers season last year when we got Micah. And like everyone was like, this is our year. This is our year. And then injuries happen.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is why you play the game, because there is no guarantee on who's going to win. And there's no guarantee on who's going to win a championship. And that is the nature of sports. And it's not for a lack of trying. Everyone is trying to win the championship. Yeah. I think that's sometimes what we forget is like, it's not just our team that's trying to win. It is every single franchise.
And if it was a great story that we won for the first time in 50 years, it's also interesting that it happened for the first time in New York in 50 years. If it was easy, they would have won more championships. And you can complain about the Bucks brass all you want. They brought a championship back in 2021. That's pretty cool. That's recent history. It's not like 30 years ago. That's a big win for the community and for the Bucks. And I'll never forget it. You're not going to forget
absolutely
it. And
not.
We're never certainly never going to forget Giannis. He's a legend in this community and will be for a long time. There will be, if the plans aren't already in place, there will be a statue of Giannis outside the Fiserv. Do you agree? Gotta be.
Probably.
Because that he anointed that building with a championship. That's the cool thing. So I would happy to give you my thoughts on the statue, like how big it should be. Just call me or text me.
But maybe we can replace the calling.
That would be something.
You'd be happy about that.
Thanks for tuning in on this Tuesday edition of Point Taken. As I always like to say, there's a couple ways you can go back and listen on WTMG.com or just search Point Taken on your favorite platform and you can get all the shows, interviews, guests, fun stuff we do. I haven't really talked about this on the air, but we try to generally make the last half hour a little bit different than the first hour and a half. Just some lighter content, some fun stuff, some cultural stuff. I enjoy that.
I also enjoy that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to, because there's so much heavy politics, and we're going to get to a story here in a second that, I mean, this is a very important race for governor of the state of Wisconsin. And I think as we talked about Friday, we would not be shocked if we see a couple more candidates.
Well, I think you said it yesterday.
Yeah.
You were like, ooh, I think there's rumors of three people dropping out.
And first one.
Lo and behold, right after our show, Missy Hughes. I would say, dare I say, your favorite of the Democratic candidates?
I like Missy because she worked for the WEDC, has a lot of firepower when it comes to economics and business. That's what I liked about her. She just never caught fire. I mean, she wasn't getting any traction in polling or even any buzz about her campaign. Not that any of the other ones are doing anything amazing. I mean, Fran Honks obviously got the social media side of things and polling on her side. I mean, we'll see. The other candidates, I think people are mentioning in that sort of, will they drop out? Will they endorse? And I did sort of a fun thing on the outline, which you guys don't see, but who will drop out and why will they endorse Sarah Rodriguez? Because there's a fear factor built into this.
Which is interesting, because you said the rumor was three people.
Yeah.
And so we have one. Missy dropped out. She endorsed Sarah Rodriguez. Joel Brennan is out with a new ad today.
I know. Well, he's got money to spend, so.
And I actually think it's a pretty good ad. It's him playing basketball against his 6'7 son, which I didn't realize his son was that tall.
Well, he's tall.
He is tall, but he's not 6'7.
No.
And then who did Crowley got an endorsement this morning from?
I love how
from the firefighters.
Yeah, no surprise.
So I don't think he's going anywhere soon either. I don't think Kelda's going anywhere. And in fact, I think she had a pretty strong statement yesterday when this was her quote coming out of Missy dropping out and endorsing Sarah Rodriguez. Quote, voters are looking for a fighter who can beat Tiffany and stand up to Trump. After a generation of right-wing policies, this isn't a moment for timid moderates with no track record of delivering.
Yeah, the whole fighter thing on my side or your side, just stupid. You're not fighters.
So I don't know as far as, so it's down to six, but I don't see,
we'll
at least, because I think people would have thought Crowley or a Brennan, if you're really sticking to that rumor of three people,
mm-hmm.
but with a new endorsement and this new ad, I don't know.
They have money to spend. So that's not surprising that they're actually spending their money. Maybe it's a last gasp. Hey, let's see if we get any traction in the next couple weeks. We obviously have the big debate coming July 28th on Channel 12 in Milwaukee. There's other forums, as we were talking about yesterday, all across the state. You're involved in one of those, aren't you?
We're doing a data center forum with all of them on the 29th at Turner Hall.
Is there a big difference on their opinions on data centers?
Fran Hong's the only one who wants a full moratorium.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Joel Brennan said things about getting rid of NDAs. So I think there is more. Yeah, but she is the only one who has a full moratorium across the state on data centers going up.
I'm more fascinated with the fact that I think this is, especially the Sarah Rodriguez part of Missy Hughes dropping out. I use the term fear factor. Maybe that's too strong. Again, I'm not a Democrat. But I think there's concern among some people that Fran Hong, if she were lucky enough to win, and she could, I mean, she's been at the top or close to the top of the polls since she started her campaign. She's done brilliantly well on the sort of the communication side of things, which is not surprising because she's good at it. I think there's a concern that a Fran Hong-led Democratic Party going into the governor's race would not be a winnable race. I think that's something that some people are thinking. I'm not an expert on it, and I certainly don't know the Democratic Party like you do. I just think that's out there.
It's absolutely out there.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk about it in the next segment. There's a lot of scholarship and writing that says, obviously, the Dem candidate would probably be left of Evers, right? The whoever it is, right?
Yes. Besides the Joel Brennan,
yeah,
I would say, I think Sarah Rodriguez is kind of being, like, trying to pin herself somewhere between Joel and Missy and then Kelda. And I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, on a spectrum from center to left, it was probably in the center, Joel and Missy, then Sarah and David, and then Kelda, Mandela, and then Fran. Yeah.
So
if I had to
tell me if you agree or not. So if you had Fran Hong, the most far left of the candidates on the Democratic side, and then Tom Tiffany is like one of the most conservative.
Who is? I mean, literally, because we're going to talk, when we come back, we're going to talk about the most recent Craig Gilbert piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And he is literally one of not only the most conservative of the representatives in Wisconsin, but truly one of the most conservative overall.
Yeah.
And so that is a wide range.
They call that stark.
A potential Fran Hong versus Tom Tiffany.
Yeah.
General election, and that is a big question. This is what Craig talked about in his piece.
Yes.
What happens? What do moderates do in that situation?
Because here's the thing. It's one thing to win a Democratic primary. You're appealing to Democratic voters. To try to win over independent voters in the state of Wisconsin, which is how you win races, because they're always close, right? Generally, unless you're Tammy Baldwin, who just rubber stamps it every time she runs.
Her races are close, too, though. She
wins. Not that close. Not compared to some of the other ones, not the U.S. Senate race with Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson or some of the other races we've had. Presidential races, certainly very, I mean, we're talking 10 to 20,000 or 30,000 votes. She wins by bigger margins than that. But I'm fascinated by what the conversation will be, whoever the Democratic nominee is, and how they will go head to head against Tom Tiffany, who's way on the right, and what moderates, people who think like me, generally.
Well, that's what I think, because I think we have a lot of moderates who listen to us. So I'd be interested in a Fran Hong Tom Tiffany matchup. Who are you voting for?
Yeah,
well, if you self-identify as a moderate.
Yeah, one of the texters just said, quick answer. Used to be a moderate Democrat, giving Fran Hong a shot. So
there you go. 855-616-1620. Who in a ideologically split general election between Tom Tiffany and a Fran Hong, who are you voting for? We'll talk about that after this. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve, and we are talking about the pickle that moderates might be in this state if it comes down to a potential Francesca Hong versus Tom Tiffany general election, considering how far opposite on the political spectrum those two are. And so we asked for people who do identify as moderates what they would do in that situation. And we have a couple people saying they would vote Fran. We have a couple people saying if it wasn't Joel Brennan, they're going to vote for Tom Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
One moderate said, I probably won't vote in that scenario, and they would just write in. So it's fascinating as far as what, because I do think there's something that'd be, when you say the, I don't know if you want to call them more establishment or whatever part of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin that is nervous about a Francesca Hong general election because they see her as the most vulnerable to losing in a good year for Democrats, still vulnerable to losing to Tom Tiffany. But there's also a lot to be gained, because I do think she is, as far as the momentum and the enthusiasm, someone that she has, of how many volunteers she has, that it's just, you're swinging for the rafters at that point.
Somebody made the claim, that's not the right word, somebody said that She demonstrates her leadership skills by running a restaurant. Or I read something like that. Is that really the same thing as leading a state or being a leader? I don't think so.
I mean, that's the thing. I've thought about this a lot as I was doing the electing women fireside chat thing that I did back in May of who is ever really prepared for how big of a job governor is, or even, I mean, specifically, even more so president, but governor, right? As we're thinking about the qualifications that any of the candidates have right now, including Tom Tiffany, of, you know, being in the legislature is very different than being the executive. It's very different than running. I forgot what number I quoted in there, but like it's tens of thousands of people who are employed under the executive branch. Yeah. And it all rolls up to you. And there's this different kind of delegation. There's a different kind of having the buck stop with you. There's a different kind of negotiation. And like it is a very different job. And I don't think you ever really get anyone who is fully prepared on day one for what that job is. And you hope you're also electing someone who can grow into the job well.
I'll give an example. Governor Tony Evers was from the Department of Public Instruction. He lived in the world of education. I would say that under his leadership, there were some successes, but there are also a lot of failures. We've talked about some of these things on the show. The fact that our scores are declining. We've had issues with some of the things going on in schools as far as sex offenses, and the fact that some of that was slept on, at least not investigated as thoroughly as some of the public would have liked, and other areas. And he came from that world. Being a restaurant owner, God bless you, that's a tough life. Long hours, hard work, not even questioning that. But I don't know that necessarily, I understand she's also a representative. So, I mean, she's doing the work. But being savvy on social media, being a great communicator to some people, in some people's eyes, and I think she is not necessarily the same thing as being a governor, rising to that level. Now, is Tom Tiffany a brilliant orator? No. I think I've interviewed everybody on this show except Sarah Rodriguez. I think you've interviewed her.
I've interviewed Sarah Rodriguez.
I have not.
You've never interviewed her?
I don't think we've done her together. That would be the time that I would have remembered. Mm. But I've interviewed everybody else, or at least talked to them. And I said it before, and I'm not shilling for Joel Brennan. In a one-on-one situation on the live on the radio, he was the best communicator of all of them. Clear ideas, vision for what he wants to do. Didn't attack his peers, his other candidates. I just thought he was a professional. Now, that being said, I'm under no illusion that Joel Brennan, barring some major surprise in the election, who knows, I guess, is going to win the nomination. So could he be number two of the potential three candidates? I don't know. And would he endorse Sarah Rodriguez? Also don't know. I just think there's this really running concern that Fran Hong's public pronouncements on social media platforms could come back to haunt her. Use of extreme profanity. Like,
What qualifies as extreme profanity?
Dropping the F-bomb in conversations that don't really need the F-bomb. You know? I know a lot of people I use it. Just listen to my podcast. You'll hear. But a lot of people don't like the use of that, especially in the written format when you're posting something. It's like, oof, did it really require that? Especially in the context of not like a funny story or something. It's like serious conversation. And you're, I don't know. I think it's her past, her social media history is going to come back to haunt her. And Tom Tiffany's campaign, if she's the candidate, will go after her fiercely to say, this is what you want as governor? That's something that she has to pay attention to. Now, she's fearless, apparently, and she may not care. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. Maybe she's got that independent streak that's like, screw you, that's me.
Well, she isn't unapologetic.
Yeah.
Right? I would say more so than any other candidate that we have on the ballot right now.
Yeah. So I don't have the answers. I'm not a Democrat. But I think ultimately this race is about wooing independent voters. Will Fran Hong do that? Will Tom Tiffany do that? Too early to know. Two extremes on wild ends of the political spectrum. It's a fascinating race. I have no idea what would happen in that. And we don't even know who the candidates are on the left. So anyway, on the Democratic side. All right, we'll wrap up the first hour of the Tuesday edition. She's Chris and I'm Steve Pointaker. Texter made a great point. I was talking about the use of profanity by Francesca Hong, candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor. Texter, 262, Donald Trump lowered the bar with vulgarity. So he was dropping F-bomb yesterday. I saw some coverage.
In regards to which topic?
Reflecting pool, probably.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I didn't want to spend much time on that because, frankly, it disgusts me. And I'll just throw this out here because I just sent a note to some people here that work here. I don't believe one word the president's saying about the vandalism that he says happened at the reflecting pool that someone took a knife and cut it, and that's the reason that the paint's not adhering and algae. I said last week, I think it was on Friday, maybe Thursday, that it's an allegory or comparison to how this president approaches everything. Very superficial, no research, no depth of understanding. There was a way to fix the reflecting pool, but it requires smart people that understand what's going on with that old monument or older monument, not one of the oldest, but old enough, and to fix it the right way. Well, he didn't do that. He hired some schmo that basically was a campaign donor, gave him $14 million, and they, for lack of a better phrase, effed it up.
To go back to my full circle.
Full circle. So it's just frustrating to me that we're not seeing, and this is where real journal, like Maggie Haberman was just on.
Regime Change, the new book.
Yeah, which I just ordered, by the way, this morning. I'm not seeing local journalists, and this is my critique, so you can fire away at me. Don't go after the station. Go after me. Attacking what I think are clearly false statements. That should be, it's not a both sides. Just because he says it doesn't make it true. You should be going after this stuff. You should be investigating these words. Was there vandalism? I don't think so. Prove it. And the president hasn't proven it. He doesn't even know how long the reflecting pool is. He said it was like 450. It's like under 200 feet or something like that, or 200 meters, whatever it is. He doesn't even know.
I think we got to go to news.
Yeah. All right. Let's get the news. That's just my rant of the day.
Got it.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
What would you do if your local high school didn't have any sports? Would you move out of the district? Would you send your kid to a private school? How important are sports or arts to your school experience?
Why do you ask that, Kristen?
I am asking that because for our Kenosha listeners, you might be aware that they have a big referendum that is coming this fall. As many school districts have become used to doing. And for them, they have the Kenosha Unified School District has a $17 million deficit. And if the referendum fails, they are weighing their options of how they're going to make that up. And one of them includes cutting their sports programs and art programs. And I saw this headline from WPR. And that just kind of was like a gut punch as far as, because I am someone, I know you're a big basics guy.
Mm-hmm.
I am, obviously you need to learn how to read and do math, but I'm also a big fan of like the well-roundedness of opportunities at school. And so not having any sports programs, I mean, if I was in that situation, I'm not sure I'm sending my kid to Kenosha, a Kenosha high school.
Yeah, in many ways. Sports programs, some of the great things that bands are doing, marching bands, that defines your school. You win state titles. You win, you know, trophies if you're talking about sports. It's in many ways, it's the bonus stuff that everyone loves about going to school, whether it's that level or college. You cheer for your team.
Well, it's not even cheering for your team. It's just the opportunity to be involved in things. Like I've said it many times as far as what being a part of team sports teaches as far as character and how to lose, how to win, how to be a teammate. Like there's a lot of things that come from playing sports that has nothing to do with getting a scholarship and playing after high school.
Sure.
But I just think there's a lot of things, the same things of being in the arts and auditioning for the play and learning how to not get the lead. And there's just a lot of other life lessons that come from extracurriculars that I think are really important. And I don't know if this is like a scare tactic from the superintendent to try to get momentum, because the last time
that's one of the board members basically said.
Well,
that.
Because the last time they had a referendum, it lost by 8 points.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the attempt to try to motivate voters to get out and vote for this thing, but I mean, what would you do?
Okay, so yeah, you set it up perfectly. So you know this because I've told you about this and I mentioned on the show a couple times. I'm doing some research on the competition between schools to get students.
For open enrollment.
Yes. So that's sort of a side project I'm working on. And it's like a lot of homework and heavy lifting you have to do. And I'll get to some final product, whether it's a news story, whether it's a podcast, whether it's on the show, we'll see at some point because I'm still learning a lot about it. But the interesting thing about that decision making is I'll give one of my teammates credit. Vince Vetrano reported
probably a year and a half, 2 years ago on operational deficits that we're going to really start hitting now across the state. Schools who don't have the money to just do basic things. Now, you asked the question, so I'm going to answer it specifically. Is this a threat?
Yeah,
it's a threat. He's saying, superintendent's saying to his residents, his voters, basically, the ones that vote in the referendum, we need you to vote yes here.
This is what's at stake.
Yes, because you will lose. Whether they do it or not, we'll see. I guess if it does lose, and it lost by 8 points last time, they don't have a hard decision to make. But this problem is not going away. Every school district is facing that for all a myriad of reasons. One, increased competition. They're losing students to other districts. Choice, charter, private, students are going there. Many of their student populations are decreasing. Teachers are moving away to different careers. You can factor in Act 10 and all the aftermath of that. The fact that it gets harder and harder to teach kids because of all the distractions. It's a very, very complex issue. But school districts are faced with a reality that they can't hide from. How do you pay for things? And I will say this, as somebody who has seen in my community, Oak Creek Franklin School District, I think we passed 3 or 4 consecutive referendums for everything from sports stadiums to we're building 2 new pools, one a competition pool, one a sort of a community pool attached to the high school. Our high school complex is now like 4 city blocks. It's massive. So when you come to us, and I think they will at some point in Oak Creek Franklin School District, we need more money to operate. We're going to be faced with the same choices. How much money are you going to bleed out of us? Because if you're on a fixed income, and we have a lot of seniors in Oak Creek, you don't have extra money to pay $300 extra each year on your property tax bill, and that's where that money is received, right, or given. So I don't know what they do. There are tough choices. That's why I'm a basics guy, because as much – I agree with everything you said about the opportunities and the incredible things that all of these other things do – orchestra, band, theater, sports, any extracurricular, basically, give to people. But at some point, the population, the public says, how are we going to pay for this? We have to stay open.
But
and how are we going to do it?
What is the slippery slope of that decision as far as if you're a young family and all of a sudden you feel like, well, the public school district in Kenosha is not great, and so then you start looking for a different place to live. And so, like, what is the downward spiral of that city when you let your public schools just fail?
Significant. You can do as much as you want on the economic side and business. Schools are.
Right? As a mom of a young child,
that drives people's choices.
Like in the next couple of years, having to make decisions on where we want to live, where we want to send our kid to school, like that is a big priority for families when picking a place to live.
If you're asking me how real it is, I don't think it's real. I don't think they're going to cut sports. Okay. But it's a real threat. Whether it changes the votes, I have no idea. But this referendum thing is not going away. Because of our funding, the way we fund, again, Republicans, all the things they did 15 years ago, that's why we're seeing the referendums. You said school districts could fund things this way. No surprise, school districts are going after referendums because that's how they fund things.
Let's take a break quickly because I know that you are doing this side project. And so I would like to know of the school board members or the teachers that you're talking to, what is the number one thing that they think needs to be fixed?
Good question.
We'll talk about that after this.
Thanks for listening on this Tuesday. Kristen asked a great question. What am I hearing from my interviews that I've done with school board members and in some cases school board presidents from 3 different districts? The number one thing they talk about is funding and how we fund our schools. So
you're not, is it that they're not getting enough money or is it that how the funding works needs to be totally upended?
It puts them in an adversarial position with their constituents, their residents. That's one thing. But 2, special needs funding has not kept pace. That's why it was included in the tax relief bill that never happened. They're just upset that they are continuing to be challenged by budgets and then, and to a person, and I've had other conversations in emails that I haven't met them in person. They it's harder and harder to just do the basics, to get teachers paid, to get teachers hired, to do all the things that are required of a school district.
So is the answer that they don't have enough money?
Yes, for operations.
For operations.
Now, there is another side to this, and I've been trying to.
Because then, so when you're getting that firsthand conversation, then we have someone like a candidate, Tom Tiffany, saying, you know, this is the most money we've ever spent per pupil. And so is that just a function of things are more expensive, inflation, and like it's obvious that everything gets more expensive, and yet it still can be like that can both be true that we're spending more per pupil than we've ever spent, and it's still not enough. Is that a feasible duality?
Everything goes up. The Act 10 reality is that for everybody, I was an Act 10 supporter. Everyone that supported, yes, because there, and even school district members will, and presidents will tell you that in some cases, some districts were just spending money like nobody's business. They weren't the, you know, the majority, but that's sort of what led to some of the Act 10 vitriol and some of the commentary that was made by Republicans. But the reality is that when you cap things, none of the costs freeze over time. So you're screwed by that. That's why we saw the aid for local governments. They couldn't do anything. They had cut what they could cut. Services got cut. Positions got cut. I mean, Oak Creek, we were doing more with less for the last few years of my administration because we just didn't have extra money to go around. And that's the reality of that. So for schools, it's no different. It's why when Vince did the series of his shows on operational costs, it's a fiscal cliff that you can't fix it without making claims or asking your constituents for more money. There is a point, though, and this is a fair point. A lot of texters are talking about this. There is sort of a, what's the word, infatuation with sports. And I'm not going to name names with districts, but the fanciest facilities, you want an extreme example, go to anywhere in suburban Dallas. They have football stadiums for high school that are better than most of the universities in the state of Wisconsin, other than Camp Randall. It's not even, I mean, luxury boxes for high school games. We're not to that extreme, but there are some pretty cool sports complexes in our area, baseball, football, soccer, lacrosse, I mean, every sport. It is something that most taxpayers look at and say, maybe we could have not spent that much on that stuff and maybe put some of that into operational. I think that's a fair assessment.
Doesn't some of that sometimes come from like big donors too,
yeah,
though?
Yes, and like that is a qualifier. Money? That is a qualifier. But I think it's frustrating. We all want the best. We certainly want to live in a district that has great schools because that's anytime you do a survey on why people move places, that's top three.
For sure.
Often top one.
I mean, it's the amount of people who are, I'll put myself as an example, right? I am a city person. I love being able to walk to a bodega, restaurants. I love the like how condensed it is and the energy that creates that. The prospect of moving to a suburb for me is like, not exciting, but in the reality of making those choices for a better school, I now that I have a kid, I totally understand why people do that. And it happens a lot. Like I have friends who were on the east side of Milwaukee and they were just outside of the Maryland Montessori district. They did open enrollment, tried to get in. They didn't get in. They moved to Whitefish Bay.
Yeah.
Like that was just like, because they didn't get in there. And like we think about that. I mean, I love River West. I love our neighborhood. But like we certainly think about, you know, if we could get a house in Shorewood, like Shorewood's a really good school district and it still feels like a city and part of the city. And so it's absolutely one of the top reasons of where people choose to live once they have kids.
Look, being a school board member, school board president, working in a school district is not easy. For all the reasons we've talked about, you know, whether it's mental health, concerns for kids, special needs, that they're not getting enough funding, whether it's the challenge of the way kids behave in school, teachers not feeling satisfied by their work anymore because they've been sort of dumbed down when it comes to some of their compensation and the way they've been treated by parents, parents' reaction or interaction, I should say, with school board members so that now what used to be a complimentary relationship is now adversarial. And you just have to watch a school board meeting on any controversial topic to see that that's true. And I've been to a bunch of them, trust me. We have to change the dynamic. I understand that making threats is sort of a last gasp by Kenosha. But to your point, this is not good news for Kenosha. It will not make their community better. It is something that people do look at when they look at their schools. The opportunities beyond just the basics, which I'm a big fan of. But I think the fundamental reason why these things are happening is the challenges of budgeting, but two, we are in a dire, horrible situation when it comes to how we fund schools. Whatever your side is, we have to straighten this out.
Does it surprise you that the candidates aren't talking about that part more? Because they're definitely talking about you know, some are talking about getting rid of school choice, and some are talking about how we need to fund schools better.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm hearing less as far as we need to rethink what the formula is.
Because this is, it's a messy, you know, complex issues are messy to solve. It's not easy to talk about them. It's often.
Do you think Republicans are talking about it? Do you think, like, when you talk to people on your side of the aisle?
Not to any depth. Not to any depth of understanding. You think they're going out and talking to school board members? Maybe. I hope so. And I guess if you're talking about the governor's race, that's Tom Tiffany. I hope he does. But he's in the northern part of the state where most of the people don't live. Their school reality.
Well, they also have school yeah. issues as far as declining.
No
yeah,
no
exactly.
People.
As far as how do you, like, how far do you make any one kid travel in order to get to school?
Yeah.
In order to, decrease the amount of schools because there's less kids.
Oh, you know, another one I hear a lot of? Why do we have buses in school districts when often there's no kids riding the buses? Like, they have to provide busing because it's required. But often the kids choose not to use the buses. They take their own transportation or hitch a ride or their parents drop them off. But they're required to have these routes. It's like, is that fiscally responsible? Maybe we should look at that.
That was an issue.
That was a big one that came up.
For Oak Creek or for Milwaukee?
I'm not going to pin it on Oak Creek because I'm in Oak Creek. But I heard it from two different districts.
Huh.
Why do we pay for buses when kids don't choose to ride?
Is that like a state law?
I believe so.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the point about driving is also a fascinating one. How long should a kid be on a bus to save money? Hour? Would you want to tack an hour? I used to live in San Francisco.
I mean, yeah, especially in the shortest days of the year. You have kids get on bus when it's still dark outside and coming home when it's dark outside. I don't know. It's not a great solution.
Anyway, Kenosha schools threatening cutting sports. Interesting conversation. We'll find out when that referendum happens. Quick break. Big threat by Kenosha schools to cut sports. 40 teaching positions. It's not just sports. That's also part of this this threat from the school board president.
Someone from the 715 suggested that clubs, perhaps as districts are forced to tighten their belts, sports, the arts, and clubs will need to be outsourced to the private sector and no longer be tied to schools. I hate that option. There's already such disparity around, especially with sports, as far as families that can afford it versus those that can't.
Yeah.
And to just have it all be privatized for money as far as opportunities to be involved in things, I hate that option.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I just, it doesn't feel like the right.
It feels like
we should explore other things before that.
If you look at club sports, it's already happening. This one from the 262, former school board president, current mayor. I will tell you that we need to look at how we fund local government in the state. Relying on the property tax is ridiculous. It's an unfair tax. Why should some elderly person be taxed out of their home simply because it's worth 10 times what it was when they bought it? That's a real problem for a lot of people. We have to be like other states that have more revenue diversification. It is the answer to figure it out, but we're not in any rush to figure out how we fund things. It's just it's the classic, this is the way we do it. Deal with it. And that sucks. The status quo is not working, and that's why we see threats from places like Kenosha to just wax, get rid of everything that people love. Sports, arts, all the cool stuff.
I kind of have to laugh because often I think you sometimes hear Republicans in Wisconsin say, we don't want Wisconsin to be like Minnesota. Have you heard that before, Steve?
Oh, yes. I actually like Minnesota, except for their football
team. Turns out, at least according to this new report of the state of the states, overall state average rank across 31 different categories, Minnesota, number one.
Mm.
We are, across all the averages, 8. This is a called State of the State Report 2026. It's a commemoration of America's 250th anniversary. If you go to stateofthenation.org, you can find it. It's a fascinating report as far as different conclusions. Obviously, when Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on this, they're looking specifically at Wisconsin. And so there's certainly interesting things for us to talk about with Wisconsin specifically, including the fact that we are trust in others, number one. It's the only thing we ranked number one
in. I want to ask you why you think that is, because I wouldn't have guessed that. I thought I'd be in the middle somewhere.
Trust in other people. Because it's interesting, though, because we dropped for volunteerism. So this is in under the category of social capital. Trust in other people, state rank, number one, volunteerism, 25, and the trend line is less and less volunteerism. Trust in other people, especially for such a divided state when we talk about polarization and some of the antagonistic things when it comes to our politics. But yeah, so at least for according to this, what do you think it is?
What do I think? Trust why that is?
Yeah. You think it's just part of our
I'm shocked by fabric? It. So I guess I don't have an answer. I would have guessed it would be in the middle somewhere. I like trust no one other than my wife, you, a few other people. I like what's the famous quote about
you trust no one?
I have a lot of doubt about people's intentions. That's just the way I am.
You
I
and think my makes, husband. My husband also is like, don't trust anybody. I was like, wait, what?
Because you fall into bad situations, bad.
When have you ever fallen into a bad situation from trusting someone?
Well, I'm not going to get too specific, but people mislead you and they're deliberately trying to push you in a direction you don't want to go in. I think that happens. It happened in my business life a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because people have their own self-interest. And maybe I see it more on that side than the personal side. I trust my friends, I guess. I would leave it at that.
Well, we don't have to turn this into like a therapy session.
Yeah. Well, you went there. You took it there. What's the journalist quote about moms? If your mom tells you she loves you, check
it out. Yeah.
That's sort of my MO. So do I think it's cool that we trust other people? Yeah, I guess. We had a win at least on one thing, right? We're number one.
Number one there.
Trust.
For a lot of other things, definitely more in the middle. But it was interesting because there was larger takeaways from this whole study as far as the state of the country.
Yeah.
Including a stronger economy does not seem to improve personal well-being. Because in all of these different categories, as far as anxiety, youth depression, like we're not making much progress. No state's making much progress, which I think is really interesting as far as like,
we were talking to Spano
yesterday
money.
As far as how strong our economy still is and how it's withstood the tumultuous events of the last year and a half. And yet the market still looks good. I mean, wealth inequality is certainly off the charts, but and yet there is still all of these well-being questions that no state is necessarily like crushing it.
No, because the things that we're just talking about when it comes to education and the cost of education, mental health treatments, helping people who are addicted to drugs, those things cost money. They require commitment from elected officials who I have less and less respect for and very little trust, probably more so than I've ever had. I mean, so.
But this is another conclusion. No state is improving on an alarming number of measures. Not a single state is improving on the following eight measures: life satisfaction, adult depression, youth depression, fatal overdoses, trust in the federal government, income inequality, long-term employment, and hourly earnings growth. At the other end of the spectrum, all states are improving on two measures: child mortality and state total income. For the other measures, a large majority of states are trending in the same direction.
I would put that under the selfish category because people are selfish.
And it goes back to what we were talking about on Friday as far as this yearning, I think, of a lot of people to have government work and not have it be so much about partisan, you know, power and winning, because there's a lot of things that, like, if you look at this, like, are we getting better?
No. But that requires hard work. And we're, again, as a doer, we have a lot of talkers, a lot of yakkers, and I understand the irony. Now, I was intrigued by the fact that on voter participation, eighth. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. And I also think that's largely because we are a purple state.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think we're about motivated. Because in all the fights that are happening over California is how they count their votes, right? In the attempt to try to make it easier for people to vote with their mail-in ballots, they still have pretty abysmal voter turnout, right? I think it's hovering somewhere between like 50 and 60%, like a lot lower. But I think there's a lot of people, when you live in a state where you just assume we're always blue.
Yeah.
It's like basically acts as voter suppression because it kind of makes people think, well, there's no point for me to vote because I just know how everyone else is going to vote. And here there's such an emphasis on your vote matters because all of the statewide elections come down to a couple tens of thousands of votes. The internalizing that, I think, is much easier in a tight race than in places where you're told it's a foregone conclusion.
Given all of our election history, we're highly motivated to vote. If you live in a state like California and you're a conservative Republican, you know, other than exercising your right, which you duly have, what are you going to change? That's frustrating. And maybe that's where you need a viable third party. Maybe that's where you need a different way to run elections. all things that serious people who are motivated by something more than money or self-interest would actually talk about. But we're not there yet. Now, somebody asked me, I think I saw a variation of this theme. Do I think Wisconsin people are good people? Absolutely. You gotta earn my trust and respect. You gotta earn it. Show me something.
Not me. And when I see it freely.
Yeah. And I'm a decent person. I'm not saying I'm some animal that hates everybody. I don't hate anybody. Well, I guess that's not true. But what's disappointing is volunteerism 25th. I thought it'd be higher because we're a very generous state. Every time we ask money for money, people donate. So that surprised me.
I think this is really interesting. I think I would put this in the newsletter for this weekend because I think it's an interesting thing to look at both how they collected the data, where the Midwest and the New England trends the highest as far as regions across all of these different measures, but Wisconsin specifically does not outperform any of our Midwest neighbors on any of the 14 topics.
I got one they outperform their neighbors on. Drinking.
Yeah, that's probably
true. We're as good as it gets.
So it's interesting to look at this, and it's interesting to think about, like, what is the responsibility of any level of government of what they could be doing for this as far as our municipality or county or state to be improving across these categories?
Serious leadership, real leadership. Do we have it? I don't think so. So I would rank us low on that. Quick break. All right, we've been talking about the reaction of fans traveling from around the world to the United States for their World Cup games, and fans are amazing. I heard Vince talk about this morning how cool I love all that stuff because it's excitement. It's when you strip out all the nonsense that people could just, you said this the other day, that you just appreciate the people of the country, not the leadership of the country.
Yeah, there's a line going around on social media of something like, the World Cup feels like we're having a sleepover with our cousins that we never get to do because our parents are always fighting.
Yeah. That's a great line.
I didn't come up with it. I can't claim it, but it's funny.
So in the little time I spent on social media, I was on Instagram, and I caught this fun little AI-generated clip about some fans' reactions to the things they're discovering in America.
I don't want it.
But I thought you loved beans and toast.
No, not anymore.
I just don't understand why we can't have free refills in the UK. It's not like the technology doesn't exist.
Ranch dressing. Do you have it?
Hans, why is everything here in children portion?
It's always been this way.
Mayonnaise, sour cream, buttermilk. Now for the herbs.
Just a little taste of, again, AI created.
How long does it go on for?
It goes on a little bit longer, but it's just...
It's all the things that they've been exposed to now. We could flip that around, though. It's like, oh, what's it like to have free healthcare?
Yeah, you would make that flip. As someone who's been in Europe extensively, almost all over except for Scandinavia, it is way different, their food, the choices, the way they serve it. You don't have to look any farther than the temperature of their beer in some places. It's just different. But I love the fact they're spending their hard-earned dollars, by the way, coming here for the World Cup to support their team. I love that. And two, they're celebrating. And again, I'll reiterate the point you made. It's the people of the country that make America great, not the leadership. As much as you can admire leaders, I don't care what side you favor, it's the people. Because we are a melting pot. We represent all these countries that are coming here to visit for the most part, right? I mean, you can almost name a country in the world that there's somebody that you know that, oh, they're from that part of the world, or their parents were there, or grandparents. I love that. That is the coolest thing about the World Cup. I could care less who wins the World Cup.
Have you watched any games yet?
I watched pieces of games. I was watching Messi yesterday.
Okay.
Two goals, but all-time leading scorer in World Cup play. He is so good. And here's a funny little detail. I'm watching the pregame where they're saying players to watch. They don't have Messi on their list. Like, why would you not have him? He scored two goals,
well,
for God's sake.
They also might just be doing as far as players you may not have heard of
I
before.
I guess.
Sure, if you don't know who Messi is, you're really living under a rock.
It wasn't that. It's just like, look at these other... No, watch Messi.
Yeah, he's
fantastic.
We should get you to Nomad.
Hmm?
Did you see any of the pictures of Nomad on Brady Street?
No, but I have one closer to me, Moran's Pub in South Milwaukee. They closed the street for this.
They did, and that's what Nomad did, too.
Yeah,
and so I didn't get to go, but I think I might go this... when do they play? Do they play 2 p.m. Friday? Or 9
sounds,
p.m. When do they play on Friday?
Yeah, somebody tell us that's paying attention. I'm gonna probably if they keep going, I'm gonna go watch a game somewhere because you have to experience it.
Yeah,
every four years. Yeah, it is.
You were like kind of poo pooing at the beginning. I feel like you're getting more into it,
but because of the way you sort of
I convinced you?
Yeah, just the way that we should appreciate it. I'm not a soccer guy. I don't really care about that.
But it comes, this is my thing. This goes back to the thing we were just saying about Kenosha. I will never have a job on ESPN Milwaukee because I don't know like the ins and outs and the data and all the players. But like, I am such a sports fan because of the stories that come out of sports. And I think the pride, especially when you talk about representing countries, like it is awesome to see all these cultures being represented. And like when you have, you know, when you see Curaçao tie with Ecuador and a country of 150,000 people tie with a country of 14 million people and what the streets looked like on that tiny island and how much pride people have. Like, it is just, I don't know how, even if you don't know, understand a thing about soccer, how you can't watch some of these stories unfold and not feel better about humanity.
We rant and rave about the Super Bowl, but that's just us, basically. Mm-hmm. This is a world, what a great example of how it could be on any front other than sports, with that sort of enthusiasm, support, energy, passion, something to think about. We'll wrap the Talking Tuesday edition of Point Taken. We haven't said that at least, I think it's the first time we said it today. Talking Tuesday, Kristen and Steve, 620 WTMJ. Wrap it up after this.
All right, we got our answer. Team USA plays Thursday night, 9 p.m. against Turkey. But what did I say that's called? A dead rubber match?
Yeah, so I don't think they have to play some of their injured players. They want to get healthy for their next game, right?
Yeah. And they already clinched their spot into the next round.
Yeah.
And Turkey's already not going to the next round.
Oh, so maybe it'd be an interesting game.
Could be.
Actually, less pressure as a fan.
So for people whose bedtime is 9 p.m., you don't maybe feel as pressured to stay up and watch. But
why are you looking at me when you say that? I stayed up till midnight, 12:30.
I know. I'm surprised that you are not still bouncing back and feeling a little groggy.
I'm fresh.
Yeah, I hear you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so are you going to watch that game? Are you going to stay up?
I watched some of it, yeah. Okay,
before you have to go to bed?
Mm-hmm. I love how you just openly mock me on the air. Oh, yeah.
You know, my thing last night, my witchy summer solstice.
Yes, your summer solstice. How was that?
It was beautiful.
We were
on the beach.
Female hippies.
Yes, and we were all wearing flower crowns.
Oh,
we had a lot of looks
from
other people being like, "What are they doing?" But it was so fun. It was so beautiful. But I had one of the women there. We were walking down to the beach up in Fox Point, and she was like, "So do you and Steve actually get along, like off the air?" And I go, yeah, like he's one of my like very best friends. She goes, I always wonder about that. She's like,
Why would you think that?
She's like, I listened to the show and you guys are so good together, but I didn't know if you were actually friends or not. I was like,
What's her first name?
Her name was Abby.
Abby, we love each other.
We do love each other. So, and that's why I can openly mock you and you don't take it too seriously.
I'm going to start mocking you more. No, I'm not. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Big show, as always. News next.